Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J this morning, former Chicago Tribune editorial board.
Page editor?
Director? Editor?
Editorial page. I can't even remember.
Editorial page editor. It has been weeks.
Yes.
Yeah, you've decompressed. She's Kristen McQueary, of course. She returns to the show. Great to have you back.
Thank you. Yeah. Great to be here.
Yeah, now you're allowed, now that you're out of that gulag, you're allowed to do fun things like co-host with me.
Yes, and you swoop in at, you know, 5:15 as usual.
Five,
I thought, is he even here? Is he showing up?
5:12.
5:12.
Just in time delivery. My supply chain is not broken. So everything is lined up and we're ready to go.
You just walk right in with your coffee cup and put your headphones on and that's it.
Preparation. That's the key. It's a little lesson for you as you embark on your next professional pursuit. Preparation.
Okay.
You know, you show up, you're ready to go. You're ready to rock.
Oh, and I'm ready.
We have a lot of film to break down. This is a film day. And it started yesterday when New York State Attorney General Letitia James, who has a little problem with the word texts. See if you pick it up. Letitia James making this announcement. Remember, he should resign, but we should also let that investigation be completed and a report be issued. Well, yesterday was report completion day, Attorney General James.
They reviewed more than 74,000 pieces of evidence, including documents, emails, texts, audio files, and pictures.
Texts?
These interviews and pieces of evidence reveal a deeply disturbing yet clear picture. Governor Cuomo sexually harassed current and former state employees in violation of both federal and state laws. The independent investigation found that Governor Cuomo sexually harassed multiple women, many of whom were young women, by engaging in unwanted groping, kisses, hugging, and by making inappropriate comments. Further, the governor and his senior team took actions to retaliate against at least one former employee for coming forward with her story, her truth. And Governor Cuomo's administration fostered a toxic workplace that enabled harassment and created a hostile work environment where staffers did not feel comfortable coming forward with complaints about sexual harassment due to a climate of fear and given the power dynamics. The investigators found that Governor Cuomo's actions and those of the executive chamber violated multiple state and federal laws, as well as the executive chamber's own written policies. This investigation has revealed conduct that corrodes the very fabric and character of our state government and shines light on injustice that can be present at the highest levels of government.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro text line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Do you want a refund on your copy of Leadership Lessons now from Andrew Cuomo?
You know, I would just like to know, where's the pressure for the publisher to now pull that off the shelves? And isn't that the case with, if you are right-leaning and you write something that people, you do something offensive, you write something offensive, there's pressure for the publisher to take action. But I'm not seeing that in this case.
Pull
either.
It off Amazon, right?
Sure.
Delist it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Also, does he have to return the $5 million? What about the International Emmy? Does that have to go too? Does he get to keep that? I don't know.
You know, everybody's wrong about this, though, Dan. This is not a case of a harasser. This is the public just not, and his employees, not understanding his Italian culture.
He loves too much. I know.
This is a story about love and affection for his employees. And I thought it was so touching during his defense that he pulled pictures of his mother and grandmother and how they would, you know, place their hands on the face. I mean, that was so, he is a sweetheart. And the fact that we are all misinterpreting this, it's on us.
Well, so here's the thing. I think you have to hear from Charlotte Bennett. We pride ourselves here having institutional memory. So the only way you can really appreciate the remarkable response you got from Nipple Rings Gambino yesterday. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. It was like a kitchen sink. There was some George Costanza. Was that wrong? Because I got to plead ignorance on this one. There was some Harvey Weinstein.
Yep.
You know, hey, I'm too busy fighting the NRA to worry about, you know, these accusations. He's too busy fighting COVID to worry about. There was a lot there. But I think you have to hear from Charlotte Bennett. Charlotte Bennett was one of the accusers who did that interview back on March 5th with CBS's Norm O'Donnell. And since he spent about the first half of his response addressing Charlotte Bennett, I think it's really important to hear from her, including how her characterization of him played out in his back on March 5th, played out in his response yesterday. Like he didn't think that anybody would match up what she had said back in March with what he had to say yesterday. First, just the baseline here. Charlotte Bennett, who worked as basically an executive assistant for Cuomo.
Governor Cuomo said that he has never propositioned anybody. Do you believe that he was propositioning you?
Yes.
For what?
Sex. The pandemic was obviously stressful for all of us, and he was on TV nearly every day talking about it.
You make that gown look good.
So you think all this national attention may have emboldened him?
Absolutely. I think he felt like he was untouchable in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. June 5th, she's called into his office.
So he goes, "You were raped. You were raped. You were raped and abused and assaulted."
Another key encounter happened on June 5th when Bennett says she was called into Cuomo's office to take dictation and he told her to turn off the tape recorder.
And then he explains at that point that he is looking for a girlfriend. He's lonely. He's tired.
You've just finished dictation and the governor is telling you he's lonely and looking for a relationship.
Yes. The governor asked me if I was sensitive to intimacy.
In his office?
Yes. During the workday. He asked me if age difference mattered. He also explained that he was fine with anyone over 22.
And how old are you?
25.
What were you thinking as he's asking you these questions?
I thought, he's trying to sleep with me. The governor's trying to sleep with me. And I'm deeply uncomfortable. And I have to get out of this room as soon as possible. I did. It's not an apology. It's not an issue of my feelings. It's an issue of his actions. The fact is that he was sexually harassing me, and he has not apologized for sexually harassing me. And he can't even use my name.
Can't even use my name. She describes him as manipulative, you know, grooming. You heard the phrase grooming. She talked about loving her job, that he was her mentor, and so on and so forth. That last piece, especially. So just a little refresher on what the allegation is so that his response is understood in context. And that last piece about he couldn't use my name. So here's Cuomo yesterday. First, just to focus on that, he couldn't use my name. So what did he do yesterday?
Charlotte, I want you to know that I am truly and deeply sorry. I brought my personal experience into the workplace, and I shouldn't have done that. I was trying to help. Obviously, I didn't. I am even more sorry that I further complicated the situation. My goal was the exact opposite. I wish nothing but good for you and for all survivors of sexual assault.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. I just thought that was a particular tell. He watches the CBS interview. He watched back in March. He watches her response to his response to the allegation at the time. And now he's updated his response yesterday to address some of what she said, right?
But also just to expose her more to people who haven't been following this as closely. That was highly unusual of someone in this situation when you are going to, if you are going to respond on camera to something explosive like this, you don't name your accusers, you don't address them. And so the fact that he kind of veered off and started speaking directly to her, it made my skin crawl. It was so uncomfortable just watching him try to weasel his way out by specifically addressing her.
And he addressed her by name, which she
right.
criticized him for not doing it back in March. But she said, Charlotte, I'm sorry for sexually harassing you. Not Charlotte, I'm sorry you misinterpreted my intentions of trying to salve your wounds, of trying to provide help through my personal experience with my, you know, raising daughters. And you misunderstood what I was attempting to do. I mean, there was no misunderstanding in Charlotte Bennett's mind about what Hansy Andy was trying to do.
No, I mean, if he's asking her about her own experiences, her age, what his threshold is for, you know, relationships with people who are far younger than he. I mean, we all know that these cases are not necessarily about sex or about power. And at some point, I'm sure we will talk about it, but the buildup to him being on such a pedestal by the media for all of these months, not that, you know, put this new power trip in him. I think he's always been this way. But yeah, the fact that he felt very untouchable and he was having these soft exchanges with his brother on CNN and, you know, viewed upon as this comfort to America as a counterpoint to Trump, having these daily press conferences where people appreciated his directness. I mean, it's enough to just make my stomach churn thinking about how much he was worshipped, and the late night talk show hosts and the Ellens and the people who really do have influence with everyday Americans. Remember, they called him at one point, he had like a posse. He had a following. They called them homosexuals. I mean, this is so just awful and such a terrible reflection of the media. And, you know, once again, more proof as to why they're so, you know, mistrusted.
Well, since you brought it up, let's listen to one of the hit parades from the media. And what you're going to hear, which you've heard on the show before, but oh, it really bears replaying in this context. You'll hear from all of your favorites, all of the leading lights of leftist media in D.C., Stelter with David Remnick, Nicole Wallace, Carl Bernstein, Chris Hayes, Maddow, Heilman, Lester Holt, Brian Stelter again, Nicole Wallace, Biden, Fredo, John Heilman, Joy Reid, Stelter, again and again. It was because it wasn't just one time in passing the praise.
David, we're standing by for Governor Cuomo's press conference, his daily briefing. How would you contrast Cuomo and President Trump's handling of the crisis?
Truth versus mendacity.
Governor Cuomo out there day after day after day, everything Trump isn't, honest, direct, brave.
Real leadership of the kind the President of the United States should have provided.
Governor Cuomo is clearly living in a totally different reality, the actual one, than the President of the United States.
Governor Cuomo has become a national leader.
For a lot of people, Andrew Cuomo has become the leader of the Democratic Party.
He is conveying incredible strength.
You spoke to National Guard troops today in a stirring speech that, if I wasn't listening carefully, I thought you were sending soldiers off to war.
This has been a remarkable show of leadership by Governor Cuomo in recent days. He's providing hope but not false hope.
Governor Cuomo, no. I think, is one of the heroes on the front lines.
With all of this adulation that you're getting for doing your job, are you thinking about running for president?
Andrew Cuomo, who has a daily television show now and has become in some ways the shadow president.
Maybe Trump is just a little bit mad that Governor Cuomo has become a kind of acting president.
Dealing with hardship actually makes you stronger. That's what Governor Cuomo said earlier today. That's what I'm going to go teach my kids right now at home.
Thank God I wasn't raised by Brian Stelter.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. this morning is former Chicago Tribune editorial page editor Kristen McQueary. We're talking about Nipple Rings Gambino, Randy Andy, and we're going to continue talking about him. I got this text from a friend. This guy has always been a known dirtbag. Now the party needs him gone. We, the public, are being distracted with the story while other serious nefarious actions by our government continue. Not quite. I don't quite agree with that. First of all, yes, maybe people in the know have known he's a dirtbag for a long time. But the general public didn't. Otherwise, he wouldn't have got a $5 million book deal and an international Emmy. That's not how he was being treated. And how he's treated by the press corps is what informs the views of way too many in this country. Number one. Number two, for all the things that he did, I want to see a reckoning. If you want me to have confidence in any institution, starting with law enforcement at both the states, plural, and federal level, then there has to be a reckoning for bad actors like Randy Andy. Otherwise, there's no reason to believe that we live under the rule of law. And of course, there's a lot of other reasons not to believe it, too. But I'm saying generally speaking. So, no, this is actually quite important. In addition to identifying how people behaved and how they're now behaving, so we can separate the dilettantes from the serious people and stop listening to the dilettantes, as we played that mashup of all of the media commentary on Randy Andy when he was a useful instrument for them during the Trump years, right? Yeah. So, no, this is actually quite important, I think. And so going back to what he had to say yesterday, because this is so illustrative of him, and he knows what's coming because we've already been through this in March. When the allegations, when we were up to 11 women, you had the same people, like you heard on Mike Scott's newscast, calling for him to resign back then. He didn't do it. We had the investigation going on. That bought him some time. A report was going to be issued. Now we're here. So now they're redoing it. Remember all those Democrat socialists at the state level in New York, inside the Beltway, resign. He didn't do it. They went away. We did our job. We said he should resign. He didn't resign, so we're going to shrug our shoulders. Of course, those same legislators in Albany had the same power then that they have now to move to impeach him, but they didn't do it because issuing a press release was good enough then. It's not good enough now, which is why Cuomo's tenure is coming to an abrupt end, no matter how he tries to weasel out of it. And I do mean weasel. Going back to Charlotte Bennett, who really was, I think, the watershed allegation in this instance, listen to his whole dissertation in response to the report yesterday on Bennett.
Charlotte Bennett, who worked in my office, and it's important to me that you fully understand the situation. Charlotte worked in my office last year as an assistant. She was smart, talented, and eager to learn. She identified herself to me as a survivor of sexual assault. She said that she came to work in my administration because of all the progress we had made in fighting sexual assault. She talked about the personal trauma that she endured and how she was handling it. I could see how it had affected her. I could see her pain. People now ask me, why was I even talking to this young woman if I knew she was dealing with such issues? Why did I even engage with her? That is the obvious and fair question, and one I have thought a lot about. The truth is that her story resonated deeply with me. I had heard the same story before, with the same ugliness, the same injustice, the same damage. Not only had I heard the story before, I had lived with the story before. My own family member is a survivor of sexual assault in high school. I have watched her live and suffer with the trauma. I would do anything to make it go away for her. But it never really goes away. I spent countless days and nights working through these issues with her and therapists and counselors. I'm governor of the state of New York, but I felt powerless to help.
So his personal experience informed, wants you to convey his understanding and set the table for this is all he was trying to do with Charlotte Bennett. You find that persuasive? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-36DA, turnkey.pro, text line, because from there it really goes off the rails.
Really? It gets worse than that?
You don't find that persuasive?
I mean, what I find persuasive is Charlotte saying in no uncertain terms he was trying to sleep with me. So do we believe women or we don't believe women? Do we? Why did he even get this much time to try to wriggle himself out as I was trying to be her counselor? I was trying to help her. I mean, that is so gross. This is just awful, horrific behavior. And it's just stunning to me that, well, to your point earlier, he should have been impeached based on the nursing home deaths. So I understand the criticism that because it's a sex scandal, now we're all engaged and mm-hmm. now there's going to be an actual impeachment. Now President Biden at press conferences is being, you know, asked about whether or not he should resign. So, I mean, the fact that he wrote a book during the pandemic about his terrific handling of the crisis and then made $1 billion off of the book. And then it was discovered that his own aides were hiding deaths because they didn't want to outpace New Jersey. And they did, in fact, put sick people in nursing homes. And then it took the family members of those people who died. And I think the New York Post to finally reveal what was really going on with these underlying numbers. And I just never felt like that got nearly the coverage that it should have.
Well, you're not the only one. Janice Dean, Fox News, who lost both of her in-law, her mother-in-law and father-in-law, and who was really beating the drum on this issue. Here was her reaction after Cuomo's response to the announcement of the findings in that report.
And I've been fighting for justice for my in-laws since May of last year, when we found out he was putting COVID-positive patients into nursing homes, and then he covered up the numbers for months and months to sell a $5.1 million book to celebrate himself in the middle of a pandemic. So there's not only the, you know, the sexual assault and harassment charges, but we're still waiting for justice when it comes to over 15,000 seniors that died in nursing homes. I think in part to his March 25th order to put infected patients into nursing homes. And not only that, we have, you know, the COVID test, the VIP COVID test that he was giving to his brother and his families while nursing homes could not get any to test incoming patients. There are state resources that he used for that $5.1 million book and so many other scandals that plague this governor. But today, I embrace, I salute, I thank the Lord for these women that were brave enough to tell their stories and show what a monster this man is.
Monster. Monster. I mean, wow. That's strong words. That's a strong word. It's a strong characterization. I don't think it's an inaccurate one. It's just strong. It's unequivocal. And it also speaks to, you know, the vindication that Janice Dean feels. She's just basically, it's like, by essentially her posture is by any means necessary, take this guy down.
Well, and they're going to now that they're exposed, now that there's pressure. The what's the makeup of the House?
And they've got
the majority.
Majorities.
So now they are moving toward impeachment articles if he does not step down. But great. So you let all these months go by, and only when you're forced, when the pressure has built up to this point, are you willing to do the right thing?
And just before, you know, we go back to the sexual harassment piece, since we're on the nursing home piece, you know, again, the People's Institute of Memory, it was Democrats back when that started to break apart that started to tell you who Cuomo was. Democrats like Ron Kim, who is a assemblyman from, I think, Brooklyn. Remember what he had to say about dealing with Randy Andy, our America's mayor when it came to America's governor when it came to COVID, when Ron Kim started asking questions about the nursing home decision and about the characterization, the lack of how forthcoming they were with information from the order to the present.
When we get closer to the truth behind the growing nursing home scandal in New York, Governor Cuomo tries to implicate you in the cover-up or threatens your livelihood if you don't lie for him. And that's what happened to me in the last 1 week. I was one of six lawmakers in that private meeting for 2 hours with Secretary DeRosa when she accidentally told us the truth, that there was a cover-up and fear that the information would be weaponized against Governor Cuomo. That moment, I had to tell the truth, and I had to let the public know what happened. And Governor Cuomo called me the next day at 8 p.m. while I was about to bathe my kids. I was with my wife, and for 10 minutes, he berated me. He yelled at me. He told me that, you know, my career would be over. He's been biting his tongue for months against me. And I had tonight, not tomorrow, tonight, to issue a new statement essentially asking me to lie. And asking me, like, I heard and I saw a crime the other day. And he's asking me that I did not see that crime.
Yeah. He's a government mobster. Nipple rings Gambino. And that, by the way, Ron Kim from Queens, not Brooklyn, just to correct the record. And so what do we make of this? Letitia James said he broke federal and state laws. So is there a prosecution? Whether he's impeached or not, he should be prosecuted, right? You had the Attorney General of the state of New York say you broke the law. So what's the controversy in terms of moving forward with the prosecution? When does that start?
Well, there was some confusion about that. The local state's attorney is saying, and I don't even know if it's a man or woman, saying he or she is going to look into it. But there was some part of that press conference where the Attorney General was not going to forward the case. And I'm not sure what. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but it did not seem like she was willing to take the next step.
Unless she wanted to, I guess, outsource that to the Manhattan DA. I don't know the process, but she's got an issue if there's no prosecution coming forward. She said he broke federal and state law.
She did.
Normally when you say somebody broke federal law or state law, who's ever talking about it says, and so we've impaneled a grand jury, so this person has been indicted on these charges. So, you know, there you explain the process by which you're going to now prosecute that person. That didn't happen. So that's something else we'll have to watch.
Yeah, I think it's the DA in Albany who said that his office will begin formally requesting the materials from the office. So maybe
all right, stay. That would make more sense, I guess, since that's the state capital, right? The Albany, not Manhattan. But okay, fine. But I mean, unequivocally. It's not just a political matter, it's a legal matter.
Well, and how many other women are going to come forward? You know, sometimes it takes a while.
We're at 11.
But sometimes it requires others to pave the path for other women to come forward. Maybe they won't. Maybe this is it. But I have to think that if this was a serial issue with him, that there are more cases.
Well, you know, if and when he is impeached and, you know, if he's allowed to make his case, he certainly will if he's indicted. I wonder how the excerpts from this response he had yesterday will play. So you heard him addressing Charlotte Bennett, and it's like she just misunderstood. I'm so deeply in the fight for protecting women from sexual assault. She just misunderstood me when I inquired about when I inquired about her status, when I asked her, I said, I need a girlfriend. when I told her that anyone over 22 years of age will do. Me counseling her.
Right. I was trying to help her.
With getting over her the sexual assault she apparently suffered in college. He also responded to the groping allegations.
There is another complaint I want to address from a woman in my office who said that I groped her in my home office. Let me be clear. That never happened. She wants anonymity, and I respect that. So I am limited by what I can say. But her lawyer has suggested that she will file a legal claim for damages. That will be decided in a court of law. Trial by newspaper or biased reviews are not the way to find the facts in this matter. I welcome the opportunity for a full and fair review before a judge and a jury, because this just did not happen.
Mm. He really, as opposed to trial by media, unless the target's like Brett Kavanaugh or Clarence Thomas.
Or, you know what I kept thinking about? Do you remember how the media absolutely went after the Pences because Mike Pence revealed that he did not like to have dinners with, you know, people outside of who he wouldn't sit down with a female unless he had someone else with him, and he wouldn't go to an event if there was alcohol if his wife wasn't with him. And they have a strong, healthy marriage, and that's what works for them. Great. So here you have the non-creep of Mike Pence, who was vilified in the media for being anti-woman because he was trying to follow the rules and be really ethical about the way he carried himself. And then you have months of allegations against Cuomo, and everyone is willing to just brush it aside.
Mm-hmm.
So this is also the lens of the media that we are dealing with. And if you think that somehow Cuomo is going to get, as he said, you know, he thinks he's being vilified by the media. No, he has no idea what that actually feels like.
Of course. And you're right, because the media, the D.C. press corps is full of essentially Gore Vidal devotees. I mean, these are all, you know, cheerleaders for Sodom and Gomorrah. Of course, Mike Pence. Mike Pence. Oh my gosh. A Christian who lives out his faith.
Right.
That is disgusting.
That is horrible.
He's oppressing his wife.
Anti-woman.
He's oppressing his wife.
He's oppressing his wife. He's not. He's not allowing women to be promoted in his office.
Oh yeah.
That was a moment during.
He doesn't have a toxic workplace.
Right.
How dare he?
How dare he try to be extremely, you know, careful in his interactions with women? I mean, it's just remarkable.
One more: the hands to face gesture. And the kissing people on the forehead. You know, that's a generational thing. It's a culture thing.
Other complainants raised against me questions that have sought to unfairly characterize and weaponize everyday interactions that I've had with any number of New Yorkers. The New York Times published a front page picture of me touching a woman's face at a wedding and then kissing her on the cheek. That is not front page news. I've been making the same gesture in public all my life. I actually learned it from my mother.
Oh, here's the part.
And from my father.
Grab your tissues.
It is meant to convey warmth, nothing more.
That's it. But it's tough when, you know, Andy Cuomo can't get a break from the New York Times. The New York Times is so unfair to Democrat politicians.
That's not news. That was not news.
He does hand gesture. He does grab people by the face. He does kiss people.
I do it with everyone.
Everyone.
Black and white. Young.
Man. Everybody.
And old.
Wait for it.
Straight. And LGBTQ.
Oh my gosh,
of course.
He's covering every
he's got every
people.
Inuit Eskimos. I got everybody.
Friends, strangers, people who I meet on the street.
This is a Saturday Night Live skit.
Yeah, everybody.
For
look,
real.
I do. All right, I do also grope people. Say ciao bello. I do slap people on the ass and say good job when they do a good job.
And I'm equitable about it.
I do. Yes, I do stick my tongue down people's throats, but it is it's cultural. It is a way to say hello. Ciao bello.
I didn't watch that whole press conference, but that is a gem. I hope Chris Cuomo was part of the advisory panel who really helped pull that together.
Larry and Carol Stream.
Hey, good morning, folks. I'm just wondering where, you know, if this was, what's his name, the Supreme Court judge, you know, he'd be hung.
Right.
This is the Me Too crowd. Where is all of that, that crazy lady attorney from California who sues
Gloria
Allred?
Yeah, right. Thanks for the call, Larry. Yeah, all I've seen so far is Emily's List, pro-abort group, has come forward to say he should resign. A lot of others, Planned Parenthood, obviously pro-abort. All the Me Too groups, I haven't heard much from them.
They're pretty quiet.
Interesting. Mike and Griffith.
Hey, how many times have we said that Mike Madigan was going to resign, right? This guy's going nowhere. I was just in New York 2 weeks ago. I was wearing my assless chaps, and he gave me a good squeeze and a French kiss. I loved it.
That's
he's
just
not going anywhere, baby.
That's how, thank Mike, that's just how he says hello. Greg in Jefferson Park.
Good morning. None of these women's lives mean anything. None of those people who died in those hospitals mean anything. This is the Democratic Party doing what they do, and they're going to continue to do it. They're doing it right now with you better get vaccinated or else. And after that, they're coming after your guns, and if you don't do it, we'll squash you. Same old, people better learn.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
Thanks for the call, Greg.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning is Kristen McQuarrie, former editorial page editor of the Chicago Tribune. And Kristen, we just heard that Governor Jelly Belly is having a presser this afternoon at which he is going to say, listen up, parents with school-age kids, at which he is going to say, hey, school boards, you shall follow CDC guidelines when it comes to mask wearing or CDC guidelines in general. This is after all these fights over all these weeks, you know, in an effort to get optionality with respect to mask wearing, parental discretion with respect to mask wearing.
Local control.
Local control. And now big boys coming over the top and saying you shall follow school district school boards to absolve them of responsibility, too. You shall follow CDC guidelines. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 646-36DA, turnkey.protextline. Well, what happens when the CDC and NIH can't figure out what the guidelines are? NIH Director Francis Collins yesterday on CNN.
And that's the reason why the recommendations are for kids under 12 that they avoid being in places where they might get infected, which means recommendations of mask wearing in schools, and that at home, parents of unvaccinated kids should be thoughtful about this. And the recommendation is to wear masks there as well.
Wear masks at home.
Wow. I mean, I saw that in a in a political cartoon at one point, Joe Biden in bed next to his wife wearing a mask, a cartoon. Never thought it would really come to be real life where we're masking at home.
Oh, whatever you think you're parroting is going to come to fruition in this world in which we live today, at least with these aspiring authoritarians in charge. Tony Fauci had to go on CNN then to revise and extend Francis Collins' remarks on mask wearing.
It's very simple, Aaron. He misspoke. He's a person of high integrity, and he came out with a tweet and said, I apologize. I misspoke. I got it wrong. Parents do not need to wear masks in their own home. That is the right answer. Dr. Collins said he misspoke, and I give him great credit for admitting it very, very quickly of saying that he misspoke. So parents should not be confused. You don't need to wear masks in your own home.
Okay.
Oh, thank you so much for clarifying
that. The director of the National Institutes of Health is confused what the CDC guidelines are, because he was unequivocal. It wasn't like he stumbled over his words. This isn't that complicated. What's the CDC guideline? Francis Collins thought it misspoke. He said very explicitly, in your home too. That was his understanding. He didn't understand, or Fauci doesn't understand, or neither one of them understands, or nobody can make heads or tails of what these people have to say. That's remarkable. I cannot wait to see the reaction in some school districts to this apparently forthcoming executive order. And by the way, what was the purpose of even bothering with the General Assembly and trying to move legislation, as the COVIDians did last session, that would bring all schools, public and private, under the thumb of the Illinois Department of Public Health, who's under the thumb of the CDC, the Centers for Control? What's the point of that?
That was to punish the success of private schools that have had successfully remained open. It was introduced by tools of the teachers' unions, including a state rep, Michelle Mussman from Schaumburg, Democrat, basically introduced a bill that would override the ability of private schools to even do what they did do, which was successfully operate in-person learning throughout the entire year. It was to punish them. Luckily, parents fought back. It got enough press coverage where it got stuck in a Senate committee, but it could still be revived.
Sure. And what of Jelly Belly's executive order, even as it just pertains to public schools?
If you were
serious about any sort of discussion on this, you could call an emergency session of the General Assembly. This is that important. Parents are engaged enough. School boards around the state are making very different decisions. Is this showing leadership? Is that what this is?
No, it's stomping on the rights of local elected school boards to make their own decisions for their own populations. I mean, he doesn't have to do this. If he's looking for political cover, he can say, I'm rightfully leaving it up to local school boards, and parents can interact with their locally elected school board members to decide what is the best path forward for their particular district. If this is, in fact, what he's going to say today, this is a huge overstep. And again, it's an executive order that should be challenged in court, because at what point are we still in an emergency phase where he gets to just issue executive orders unchallenged?
What's the tally at, 19?
Oh, I think it's much more than that.
No, but I mean, just extending his emergency powers.
Right.
I think it's 19. That's got to be right up there with the national leaders in terms of by edict residing all power in the executive.
But he doesn't get any pushback from the legislature, so...
Well, I know.
Sure.
Well, why would
Go
they?
Ahead.
What legislature? Why do we have a General Assembly? I don't really understand why. Why not? I mean, I guess for appearance sake?
We need people to walk in parades?
Yeah.
We need to fill some holes in parades and...
Sure. No, that's true.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah, people, you know, it's an incubator of ideas.
Oh, sure. They're always thinking outside the box, Dan.
And, you know, well, we'll tackle this a little bit later in the show, but just against the backdrop of Nipple Rings Gambino in New York, I remember when the Me Too movement came to Springfield and was going to upend the General Assembly with all of the ne'er-do-wells in that body. And I don't remember. They had brought in Inspector General, going to investigate, take out bad actors, of which there are any number. Well known, and I don't really recall much coming of that.
Well, there were some resignations, but just to refresh your listeners' memories, some of the women who came forward, like Denise Rothheimer, she pushed for more of these reports with the Legislative Inspector General to be public. They still are not. Uh-huh. They did not change that rule.
Sure.
And then when the aide who worked in Madigan's office finally came forward. And had been, you know, sexually harassed by someone within Madigan's office, and actually wrote Madigan a letter to his home to try to draw attention to this. It was only when she was about to go public, when she had talked to the Chicago Tribune, and my former employer, 24 hours away from publishing this story, did Madigan finally take action and fire this aide. And then we later found out, even after he was fired, Madigan's other friend, Mike McLean, who is now under indictment with the ComEd scandal, was secretly bundling money and getting donations for this fired sexual harasser to help him, you know, make his mortgage payments. And this was all happening and became known. And the women in Springfield still allowed Madigan to be reelected speaker and, you know, wore black and spoke, said the right things, but still, after all of that, reelected him to another term.
And I just want to be clear, when you say the women in Springfield, this is not to imply that there are any men in Springfield, because there are very few. I mean, men with chests, many men without chests, very few men with chests in Springfield. So don't let them off the hook either. But in terms of this breaking news and the imposition of Jelly Belly's will, like he's at a buffet, it's very interesting because one of the things that the school districts who are yielding even in advance of this executive order that apparently is forthcoming, you know, that of course the lawyers tell us, the insurance company tell us, we don't want to lose our federal funding. You know, they're trying to the power of the purse strings, federal government trying to impose its will on local school districts by threatening the federal support for school districts, which is substantial. I mean, for example, CPS gets about 10% of its budget from the feds. So, 10% doesn't sound like a lot, but I mean, in real dollars, that's about, $800 million. That's, so that's serious money. And so this is what I go back to Florida. Florida district drops mask mandate after DeSantis threatens funding cut. Oh, you want to play the purse strings game? Return serve, at least in the state of Florida. You want to run for cover and hide behind the federal government and say, well, we're going to lose federal money? Well, you're going to lose state money if you violate state law, which is no mask mandates. Boom. DeSantis is a man with a chest, but you have to move to Florida to enjoy his leadership. John in Villa Park, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. And so I went to the D45 meeting up in Villa Park last night. Finally got off my butt and did it.
Good.
And I go there, and as soon as they said the pledge, one of the flunky Marxist chicks up there says, we're going to go to a 15-minute recess. They do that. They come out 20 minutes later, and they also said, hey, if you're not wearing masks, we might have to close this meeting. So half the people in there weren't wearing masks. And they come back out, and they do the same thing again. They start to leave, and then people were shouting at them as they were leaving. Because, hey, do your job, let's get these things open. And you watch Channel 7 News, and they completely spun it. They said that things got physical, and there was all kinds of screaming, and the meeting had to be postponed. That's how they spun it. They didn't even have a goddamn meeting. They just closed it right off the flipping bat. And what a bunch of crap.
Thanks for the call, John. The only time things get violent at one of those meetings is when they're fighting over coffee cake in executive session. Perfect example. I mean, Villa Park, DuPage County. Joe in Lincoln Park.
Yeah, I'd like to get a little bit of a fact here. You know, we were told in the beginning how this contagion is so transmissible. And then we hear the Delta variant, it's so transmissible, just like chicken pox. Why didn't they come out in the beginning and say, well, this variant, the COVID that when it first came out, wasn't as transmissible as chicken pox.
Right. Thanks for the call, Joe. By the way, on the Delta variant, which again, former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb said would burn itself out in the next 2 to 3 weeks. He said that last week. The country of India reporting that they are not seeing any more COVID cases involving the Delta variant. They have 400,000 cases. Now it's trending to zero. UK is seeing similar. But let's run screaming off a cliff and then see if we can climb back up so that we can do this again with the Epsilon variant or the Gamma variant. This just in. Go back, do a DuckDuckGo search to 3 months ago, 4 months ago, beginning of the year, to talk about variants. The viruses mutate. I mean, actually, we've talked about this since the beginning of the outbreak, the pandemic. Understand that, once we get through this initial phase, you're going to see the virus mutate because we can't stamp it out altogether. There are going to be variants and so on and so forth. Then we're going to have to deal with those. Because we talked about what's the expectation that the vaccine would be effective against the inevitable mutations. And now you pretend like a mutation is a surprise. and it could last in perpetuity against the backdrop of what, 170 million people vaccinated and tens of millions more with natural immunity slash immunity from having been infected and recovering. It's just, it's insanity, except it's not. This is a leftist power grab. And if it wasn't at the beginning, it absolutely is now. There's no other explanation. It is a leftist power grab, and they don't care how upset you are, and they don't even care if they're on the wrong side of public opinion, because they're going to take their opportunity when they have it. That's what they do. They are bold in that way. And if, you know, you lose the House and Senate in the midterms, if you have to do 2 years of a Joe Biden lame duck, we'll gear up for 2024. And look how much progress we will have made in expanding our power in the last Trump year and the first 2 years of the Biden administration. That's a big win for them. Whereas Republicans myopically try to tiptoe through the tulips, worried about the next election. These guys, we got power. We're voting our shares. We're deploying our people to go to the wall for maximum benefit in advance of our agenda. And that's what you see happening. So you don't understand, how could this be happening? There's a revolt going on in my school district, so on and so forth. You don't understand their perspective. You don't understand their approach. Take what you can get while you can get it. We're in power. We have a basis to make this claim. We can scare enough people and enjoy the benefits of the other ignoramuses, miscellaneous ignoramuses out there living under rocks. And let's take what we can get while we can get it. Bill in LaSalle County.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Remember a few months ago when there was the skirmishes on the Indian-China border? What if the Delta variant was actually custom engineered by the Chinese government? Because the Delta variant started there, and it's kind of weird how the timing seems a little coincidental.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. I mean, who knows? I mean, this is another area of intrigue, the Wuhan lab and what was done there, what's still being done there. But, I mean, we know that that viruses mutate. That is just known. That's just a scientific reality. So we shouldn't be surprised that that's what's transpired.
But we have our governor now going to institute masks in schools 3 days after they signed off on and we held a 400,000 person Lollapalooza concert.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
For
like I'm supposed to.
I mean, it's just the hypocrisy is unbelievable. That's okay. We can do Lollapalooza. We can't do like Blues Fest or Jazz Fest or smaller venues, but this one that costs, you know, $450 even to get in the door. Mostly serves like a white suburban music hipster crowd. We're going to go ahead and allow that in the middle of the city during a rise in this variant. But now, literally 3 days later, the governor is going to mandate masks in schools because this is so frightening and dangerous to public health.
Jelly Belly skipped out when DaBaby got canceled, right?
He initially said he was going to go, and then I think, yes, he saw that this was coming, where he was going to have to make this, or he wanted to make this announcement, use his executive powers, do something about masks in schools, and so politically decided that it would not be good for him to be photographed at this outdoor festival. And so he declined his invitation at the last minute and gave his tickets to others. And I think this was also a way to needle Mayor Lightfoot. I don't think they have a great relationship, and so she still went and attended the festival.
Saw the picture of her yucking it up with Perry Farrell,
right?
Who looks great, by the way. Holy cow!
I didn't see that.
He is apparently on a steady diet of embalming fluid.
Oh, stop! Well, he's old, right?
He don't tell him that. He's forever young. Candace in Mount Pleasant.
Mount Pleasant.
I didn't know watching a. Gamora, oh, and I'll tell you what, yeah. If all these Hinsdale mom and dads, I'm telling everybody out there in your audience, watch Gamora. I don't know if you should have your kids watch it or not, but I'll tell you what, you watch that show, and you pay attention when you watch it to the infrastructure in Italy and how bad the infrastructure is. and the conditions these people have to live in because of the state. And they don't have any equality of education or job sources or any of that. And what they do about it.
Very entrepreneurial.
That show's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
For me?
Thanks for the call, Candace. They're very entrepreneurial in terms of building massive criminal enterprises, right, in and around and with the cooperation of a corrupt government in Italy. It is a great show. It's probably a little intense for, you know, your preteens, but it is a great show, and it is a bit of foreshadowing for what's to come in Chicago. I mean, frankly, what's largely already here. We just have the Potemkin village sections of the city, the old towns and the Mag Mile and Rush Street. But a lot of it's already here. It's the, you know, when is it going to happen? It's happened. It's happening. It's happening right before your very eyes. It doesn't happen all at once.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Lie to Me, Johnny Lang's classic. That's appropriate for handsy Andy Cuomo, appropriate for what we're getting from the Centers for Control as well. Even Fauci and Collins can't keep their story straight, as we talked about before Mike Scott's newscast. They're differing, alleged misspeaking and then the correcting on whether or not parents have to wear masks in their homes. Stunning. It was a fun question that Jen Psaki had to field yesterday from a Daily Caller reporter about the your papers, please, vaccine mandate in New York. Outgoing Mayor Warren Wilhelm there, first in the nation to require proof of vaccination for indoor restaurants, gyms, and shows. The key to NYC pass is what he calls it.
That's really catchy. I like that. Actually, they could have done better.
It's like you're getting the key to the city.
I like the papers, please, but you have to say it with the right. You have to say papers, please.
Not bad. You would have been great at the, you would have been great at the wall. Yeah, very good. Key to NCPS. Now, is that similar to the Excelsior pass that Randy Andy was going to roll out before his career
really
was over?
Hard to say.
I like that. The Excelsior. It sounds like a luxury car rolling off the showroom floor.
It does. Like a new Tesla or something.
Yeah. Key to NYC pass. The question, back to the question, was great because it turns their talking point on their heads. Take a listen.
So I wanted to ask about the New York City proof of vaccination. So New York City data shows that the rate for Black New Yorkers is sitting at 31%, which is a lot lower than some of the other percentages. And this is similar to the national level, according to CDC data. So is the White House concerned at all that the burdens imposed by governments and businesses like this New York City proof of vaccination is going to fall heaviest on these minority communities?
Well, I would say, Shelby, that it's our objective to continue to close that equity gap and to make sure we are, as a federal government, working in partnership with states like New York, cities like New York City, to make sure we are making the vaccine accessible, available. We're meeting people where they are. We're partnering with the right public health officials, and we will continue to do exactly that because we certainly don't want this to be a barrier of entry for communities. We also believe that at a time where the Delta variant is spreading like wildfire across the country, especially to unvaccinated communities, that it's important, and cities and communities should be able to take steps to incentivize
blah, blah, blah.
That was an example where the question, though, was so much more important than the answer. Well, she just blah, blah, blah. But you're right. It turns the entire argument on its head when these are the least vaccinated groups of people are not Trump supporters. It's minority communities, and they are doing everything they can to try to convince people to get vaccines. I think in Chicago, you can even have them come to your home. There is a basic skepticism So are you going to respect the skepticism, or are you going to force the hand of these groups that are your constituents who aren't comfortable getting the vaccine?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And by the way, Robert Kaplan had a good piece in Wall Street Journal. He's a faculty member at Stanford University's Clinical Excellence Research Center and a former associate director of NIH. False narrative about misinformation in COVID vaccines. Yeah, you don't need Dr. Vivek Murthy's truth ministry. That's not the problem. What people are posting on Facebook is not the problem. As he points, a poll completed in August of 2020 showed about 20% of the population reported they were very unlikely to take the vaccine, even if the evidence suggested it was safe and effective. Another 15% say they were unlikely to take it. Those two categories add up to approximately the percentage of adults yet to get a first dose a year later. Without even knowing there would be a vaccine, more than a third of the population told us they were planning on not accepting it. So, yeah, they got the information. I got what you're laying down for a variety of reasons that vary from individual to individual. And government skepticism is probably at the top of that list. Gee, what would they be skeptical about of the federal government about? What reasons would they have to be skeptical of the federal government? Gee, I don't know. And again, it runs the political spectrum, too. That's the interesting thing. It's an indictment of confidence. It's an indictment of the federal government that they don't have confidence in the federal government and the pronouncements from the hallowed Faucis and Collinses of the world. And Psaki had a hard time spinning her way out of that reality. For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by Dr. Salvatore Giorgiani. He's a senior science advisor to the Men's Health Network, past chair of the American Public Health Association, a former Alumni Association board member of Columbia University's School of Public Health. Dr. Giorgiani, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Dan, Kristen.
What do you think about de Blasio's vaccine mandate for indoor restaurants, gyms, shows, trying to essentially segregate depending on the locale, quarter to a third of the population that will not get vaccinated?
In general, I am not at all in favor of government mandates for these types of things. I think they are extremely difficult to administer. They just simply take the government's role, not incentivizing, but punishing people. So I just don't see how they're going to actually do that in New York without destroying the very fragile economic environment that already exists there, just coming out of the devastation of earlier last year. So I don't think that this is going to work. I think it's going to further alienate people. And I know the goal is to try and make, as I've heard and read, life more difficult for unvaccinated individuals. But I just don't think that that's the proper approach.
Here in our state, we have a governor named Pritzker who apparently this afternoon is set to announce that despite the initial approach of letting school districts decide mask policy, local school district by local school district, he's going to come over the top and mandate that school districts in Illinois must, public school districts, must follow CDC guidelines on masks. So they're guidelines for state and local governments to consider. And now a governor like Pritzker is saying it's not something to consider. It's we're going to treat it as a mandate. We're going to impose that mandate. What do you think about sort of the underlying policy of mandatory mask wearing generally, and then that decision being made at the state level as opposed to the community level?
I think it belongs at the community level. Every community is a little bit different in terms of its epidemiologic makeup with this virus. And what happens in New York City or South Chicago or where I live in Florida or in South Dakota is all very, very different. And I think that that belongs at the school level. Now, I will also add that the American Academy of Pediatrics, who is very, very esteemable, is and does have and has a long history of having the health of children at its heart, has also agreed that masks should be worn in school, particularly in areas where there is hot COVID virus spreading. So I think that they, individual school districts have to get proper expertise on their boards, listen to that expertise, look at the epidemiology, and if they are in a hot spot where you're seeing this Delta variant travel, then I think, masks in school, not necessarily outside in the playground. I think that that's extending it a little bit too far, but indoors where they may not be able to distance the children appropriately, more than 3 feet, some people say six. But I think that that is something that they should consider doing.
Do you get the sense, Doctor, that there is more, that there will be more of pushback, though, from parents who, so I have two teenagers. They are both vaccinated. They wanted to get vaccinated because they didn't want to wear masks in school. They were lucky enough to be able to have in-person learning last year. I will be extremely frustrated if we followed all the rules and we got vaccinated and then my kids are going to have to sit in, 8.5 hours again of mask wearing. Well, how does that make sense?
Well, because of the unvaccinated, I think a lot of this gets back to what we're seeing is that I do agree that we're seeing a pandemic of the unvaccinated. I think those individuals who have decided and made a decision for whatever reason, and they have the right to do so as Americans, caused those who have been vaccinated to take extra precautions. Wearing a mask can't be looked at as a punishment. It has to be looked at as a precaution to be taken. So, yes, I understand the frustration. I wear a mask when I go into crowded areas indoor. If it's midday at the supermarket and I have to run in and get something or other, I wear a mask. If it's 7 a.m. at the supermarket and there's hardly anybody there, I don't wear a mask, so I think you have to use precautions. So I understand it's frustrating. I have 10 grandchildren as well, and they are masking up, all except the oldest one, who's a college student and, of course, knows everything.
of course.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You even had Michael Osterholm, Dr. Michael Osterholm from University of Minnesota, favorite epidemiologist of Chuck Todd, say we got to talk about mask wearing a little bit more fine tuning, because most of the masks that most people wear are completely useless. It's a placebo. Yes. So he wanted to talk about N95 masks, which, that's even a little bit dubious as it pertains to COVID. But what percentage of people masking up, kids masking up and wearing N95 masks? I mean, it is infinitesimal, if any. So all of this is theater. Just functionally, forget even any more, even getting to school transmission, which is really difficult to make out. Significant school transmission anywhere in the Western world, including in, those two dozen European countries that never closed their schools or reopened them last fall, like Sweden. So on the one hand, the masks that most people wear, the overwhelming majority of people wear, completely for show, completely to signal you're virtuous or to give you a false sense of security. And on the other hand, there is virtually no incidence of significant school transmission, particularly student to adult. And so what the hell are we doing?
Well, you probably won't agree, but I do think that masking, even with typical mask, will provide some level of protection against spread and some level of protection against contraction, particularly if both parties in an area, confined area, all parties in a confined area are wearing a mask. I think that it does. That it's absolutely correct that it's not foolproof, and people who wear the mask with under their nose or who take in a deep breath every now and then because, you simply need to feel fresh air, they're defeating the purpose of the mask. But I do think that it does help. And what we're doing, and this is where I have reservations about the entire strategy, what we're doing is tapping down the virus. We're mitigating. We're not eliminating it. We have to learn how to manage it better. So I think all these approaches, hand washing, distancing, mask wearing, they are all helpful to some extent. But still, the most important thing is to get people vaccinated. So here I think if Americans, and I heard your opening segment, where 25 to 30% of folks will never get vaccinated. That is a real problem. We have to come to reconcile ourselves that we're going to have a certain percentage of the population that will never want to be vaccinated. And we have to say, well, just as we do to folks who ride motorcycles without helmets or jackets, that's okay. You can do that, but you can't really do that at the expense of the freedoms of everyone else.
Could you, what do you think, doctor, about the, give us your breakdown of the concern over the Delta variant. Is this something that will just cycle itself out, or, you know, should we expect just variants to be part of our lives and we will reopen and then we'll have shutdowns? What is your take on the danger of this current Delta variant?
It is a dangerous variant because of its ability to be spread. And that's why most organizations, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, recommends wearing masks when you're indoors in these confined spaces for long periods of time. It is very highly transmittable, and we are finding, unfortunately, that even if you've been vaccinated, well, you are protected, and you might get a mild infection or signs of a regular old flu or cold, that you can spread it to the unvaccinated individual, and they will be at high risk, and that's why we're seeing hospitalizations are dramatically increasing. So I think no one knows whether the Delta variant will last for years or months, but it's here now. I don't think anybody knows what the next variant will be or what will look like. We're looking, those people who do this for a living, are looking at the Lambda variant that's in Peru now. Mm-hmm. But we do know that there will be many other variants to come. Again, right now, the vaccines provide a dead end to an individual. If they do get the virus has much lower chance of spreading. And that's another reason for vaccination. But we will continually be bombarded by variants, and COVID will be with us for a very long time to come.
He is Dr. Salvatore Giorgiani, Senior Science Advisor to the Men's Health Network, past Chair of the American Public Health Association, former Alumni Association Board Member of Columbia University School of Public Health as well. Dr. Giorgiani, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Happy to be on anytime.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
For so long kept everything closed, and now it's time that he's exposed. I speak for a lot of people when I say it's time for him to go. What he's done is pretty sad, and you know that it's getting bad when people today hate you even more than de Blasio.
Cuomo is a liar. This whole time he's been lying, acting like a tyrant. Cuomo is a liar. But I'm no longer surprised when politicians lie.
He turned the city into a dump and tried to blame it all on Trump because he wanted that federal bailout money. Now accused of sexual assault, but he says that he's not at fault because he was just joking around and trying to be funny. Come on, bro, give me a break. Just admit that you made mistakes. I think it's about time you own what you did to the nursing homes. Because of you, some people died, and you just sat there and denied. I think you should swallow your pride and be a man and admit you lied.
That's Canton stand-up comedian Anthony Rodia. Pretty good. That's pretty good. I would have liked to hear second verse, but you get the gist of it.
His alto's a little off, but
not the best voice.
All right,
voice,
we'll just go with the lyrics.
And I like, you know, using the We Didn't Light the Fire, the Billy Joel classic.
Sure.
Nipple Rings Gambino offered this yesterday, talking about, you know, the complaints in general. Charlotte Bennett is sort of a separate case, and we'll get to her. But the complaints in general, the many women who say they were groped, hugged inappropriately, those sorts of things. You just have to understand his roots.
There is another complaint I want to address from a woman in my office who said that I groped her in my home office. Let me be clear. That never happened. She wants anonymity, and I respect that. So I am limited but what I can say. But her lawyer has suggested that she will file a legal claim for damages. That will be decided in a court of law. Trial by newspaper or biased reviews are not the way to find the facts in this matter. Mm-hmm. I welcome the opportunity for a full and fair review before a judge and a jury, because this just did not happen.
All right. I welcome that opportunity, too, because that opportunity would come with an indictment. And since the attorney general of the state of New York said, and I know this was a civil investigation, said he broke state and federal laws, then, yes, the controlling state's attorney, I guess, in Albany, will have to do his own investigation, make sure, for example, witnesses are willing to testify. I get that you have to put together a criminal case. But when you announce to the world that he broke state and federal laws, and if you don't see a criminal prosecution of this guy, that's a problem.
It's just his culture, Dan. You're not being sensitive to that, you know, touching and holding people's faces. I mean, he showed pictures during the news conference of his mother and his grandmother, you know, kissing him on the head and touching people's faces. It's just part of what they do when you're Italian. So this is just all a misunderstanding.
Yeah. He's being discriminated against for being Italian.
Yes, exactly. Well, right. He kind of covered all the bases. He's being discriminated against.
Uh-huh.
These are lies thrown against him. It's culture. You know, he does this to everyone. He's an equal opportunity harasser, whether you're gay, straight, man, woman. What were his other excuses?
Other complainants raised against me questions that have sought to unfairly characterize and weaponize everyday interactions that had with any number of New Yorkers. The New York Times published a front page picture of me touching a woman's face at a wedding and then kissing her on the cheek. That is not front page news. I've been making the same gesture in public all my life. I actually learned it from my mother and from my father. It is meant to convey warmth, nothing more. I do it with everyone, black and white, young and old, straight and LGBTQ, powerful people, friends, strangers, people who I meet on the street.
Anybody.
Yeah.
Bus drivers.
Exactly. Who wouldn't enjoy a little goose from Andrew Cuomo to help get him through the day?
To get your Monday morning going.
You know, how many times at the Tribune, for example, when the publisher was present for a meeting, did he come up and grab you by your cheeks, kiss you on the head and say, Kristen, you're the best editorial page editor we've ever had?
I mean, that's just part of being a woman in the workplace now. I mean, I couldn't count the number of times I've been swatted on the rear end or something. No, absolutely not. This is not normal behavior. This is not cultural behavior. That press conference that he held is almost like sheer comedy. I can't even believe he tried to hit all of those bases instead of just staying quiet. I mean, it's very unusual for someone who's possibly facing criminal charges to address directly some of his victims like he did. It's just the whole thing is just completely bizarre.
What about this? The inappropriate hugging. One of his accusers, a woman named Karen Hinton, said that he was aroused when he hugged her.
Don't go there.
He was aroused when he hugged her. But that's just his way. That's just little Andy coming up to say hello. Say ciao bello.
Right.
I do kiss people on the forehead. I do kiss people on the cheek. I do
stick my tongue down their throats.
I do embrace people.
It's just
my
heritage.
I do hug people, men and women.
Yes.
I do on occasion say ciao bella.
Sure.
On occasion, I do slip and say sweetheart or darling or honey.
Not to de Blasio.
I do banter with people.
Yeah.
I do tell jokes, some better than others. I am the same person in public as I am in private.
Ask my girlfriends. I am as creepy with them as I am with everybody else. It doesn't matter whether you're an asexual bus driver or you're a bi Inuit Eskimo. I treat everyone the same. I am all over them. I am like skin on a grape. You cannot get rid of me. It's my way. It's how my parents raised me.
He's really just a sweetheart. This is all just being completely misinterpreted. You know, he's just lovingly trying to sleep with everyone.
And, oh, by the way, to the extent you don't believe that, I have other explanations. Oh, this is just politics.
Also, remember where we are. Today, we are living in a superheated, if not toxic, political environment. That shouldn't be lost on anyone. Politics and bias are interwoven throughout every aspect of this situation.
Mm-hmm. He hasn't been carefully coddled and placed on pedestals by the media and won an Emmy for his daily press conferences and praised repeatedly by the New York Times, which has now called for him to resign. Meanwhile, we all know if he were of a different party and if he were a conservative male, he would have been gone a long time ago.
Well, wait a second. Who is he saying is playing politics with this? His Democrat socialist fellow travelers?
I Letitia assumed it was James? The media. He's used the New York Times as the reason he's being vilified.
Yeah, he can't get a fair break from the New York Times. They're so tough on Democrats. Letitia James, you could say, well, she has aspirations. This is the way to take him out. She doesn't need to take him out to beat him. He's not going anywhere. He's done. I mean, he's not going anywhere in terms of his continuing political career. He's done. Even if he doesn't get indicted, even if he doesn't get impeached, he's done.
Oh,
he's gone.
Not. I mean, look, we still have Bill Clinton raising gobs of money and coming to Chicago and being
as an elected official.
Okay,
he's done as an elected official. All right. Unless you know, maybe he and Wiener can put together a ticket. I'm not sure. Where's Elliot Spitzer when you need him? Boy, it said something interesting about all those wonderful pro-abort, leftist, socialist hacks in New York, Wiener and Cuomo and Spitzer. Isn't it interesting? Huh.
And his brother is still hosting. He's still an anchor on CNN, right? And I mean, the list of reasons why he should have been gone a long time ago is also lengthy. Remember a year
ago? Maybe Fredo could be indicted as an accomplice.
Well, I mean, he did advise, he was serving in some sort of advisory role, but a year ago, or a little more than a year ago, when nursing homes and hospitals could not get COVID tests,
right.
Remember this?
Mm-hmm.
They were getting top access to testing. Doctors drove out to Chris Cuomo's home in the Hamptons, took his test, state police expedited his results so that it didn't have to go through the CDC so he could get his results quicker. Family members were given immediate access. And CNN's explanation at the time was, well, Chris was showing signs of COVID and like any human being, he wanted to make sure that he could get, you know, he was going to pull every lever he could basically like anyone would. No, he was a CNN host who completely abused his authority. And again, was anything done about that? Has anything been done about his little banter back and forth with his brother that we're supposed to think is cute?
You're making the mistake of thinking that this is about them. And for the Cuomo brothers, it's not about them. It's about doing good work.
Helping the people.
Saving
public
lives.
Public servants.
My job is not about me. My job is about you. What matters to me at the end of the day is getting the most done I can for you.
Yeah.
And that is what I do every day. And I will not be distracted from that job. We have a lot to do. We still have to manage the COVID beast.
See, this is the Harvey Weinstein play here, right? Look, I plead guilty to being naive. I plead guilty to this generational and cultural difference that I misunderstood. But we got to focus on the big things, people. It's like the human saying, hey, I don't have time for all these allegations about me masturbating into a plant at some restaurant. I'm out there fighting the NRA. I don't have time for that. Neither does Andy Cuomo. Nipple Rings Gambino is fighting the COVID beast.
It's not going anywhere. This is part of the... Can we pivot and can I please stay in office? No, he's going to be impeached. But
by the way,
I
already have the guy who will play him in the Lifetime movie.
Oh, wait, let me think about this for a second. This is going to play Andrew Cuomo?
Play. It could play both roles. He's a good actor.
Give me a clue.
Christopher Walken.
Yes, I see it.
Sure. So listen to Nipple Rings.
My job is not about me. My job is about you.
Now listen to Walken in Nick of Time.
That's right, I did. I killed him. He f***ed up one too many times, so I put a bullet in his eye. Then I put two more into him just to make sure. Now, that was somebody I loved. I loved him. But I got the call. I put him down like a sick animal.
Yep, you nailed it.
Just listen again. Here's Cuomo.
I do kiss people on the forehead.
All right, here's Walken in King of New York.
From here on, nothing goes down unless I'm involved. No blackjack, no dope deals, no nothing. A nickel bag gets sold in the park. I want in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Yep, I think you got it.
Andy in Hinsdale, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
So I was listening to Cuomo, and I couldn't decide who was he reminding me of until it dawned on me. He's Virgil Filazzo in the scene at the Italian restaurant in The Godfather where he says, Mike, you got it all wrong. I am the hunted one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. That's pretty good, too. Thanks for the call, Andy. The other Andy in West Chicago.
Good morning. I think the only thing that I missed out of that coverage of what Cuomo did was that he had to say, to top it all off, that I follow and I'm doing the same exact thing our president does. Nothing different, nothing more, exactly the same thing, perfectly. That would have topped it off.
Oh, yeah, right. Thanks for calling. Right, all the misunderstandings about the groping and the neck kissing and so on and so forth with Creepshow Joe. I almost forgot about Creepshow Joe. It's funny, he wasn't asked about that when he was queried about Cuomo's future at a press availability.
Are you now calling on him to resign?
Yes.
And if he doesn't resign, do you believe he should be impeached and removed from office?
Let's take one thing at a time here. Yeah. I think he should resign.
He can only take one thing at a time. Here's the thing. Yeah, the follow-up question. You know, Mr. President, you've been accused by Tara Reid as well as, photographic and video evidence of being a bit of a creep, being a little handsy. You know, couldn't it just be like you said it was with you, a misunderstanding?
Sure.
Generational differences?
Would have been a perfectly appropriate question. He's had to answer these questions himself.
Yeah.
And the Reid example was much more serious.
Obviously, that was essentially a rape accusation.
It was, and I believe she was, a young assistant in his office and was asked to bring his gym bag over to the Senate gym or something, and he like trapped her against a wall and, yeah.
And by the way, you know. Here, we give people the benefit of the doubt because we don't do this like zeitgeist of you're guilty until proven innocent. We believe the survivors, all this hashtag silliness that substitutes for critical thinking. Oh, gave Keith Ellison the benefit of the doubt, now the Attorney General of Minnesota, even though I find him despicable, a despicable, terrible human being. But gave him the benefit of the doubt because the accusations against him raise a lot of questions of the sexual harassment nature, sexual assault nature, actually. And so the same thing with Cuomo, unlike what the left does when the target is Kavanaugh or Thomas or whoever.
Or as I said earlier, Mike Pence.
Mike Pence.
Taken to the mat for being faithful to his wife and being careful about dining with other women and being seen with other women. He was taken down as a woman hater because he is trying to be respectful. And this is what worked for his marriage, and he was absolutely torn to shreds by the left.
And because he understands, and he's also thinking about himself in public office, he understands he can be subject to accusations. There are people with political axes to grind, and so he's not going to put himself in harm's way that way.
So right.
It's perfectly rational and sensible. In addition to living out his Christian faith with his family, but right, that's the subject of ridicule. And Andy Cuomo has been the subject of a lot of people covering for him until it's been safe to come out and join in, the political execution of Andy Cuomo. Now it's safe to come out, so they're all coming out. The stories about how, his work, the office is so terrible, he's a monster, this and that. where these people knew him for decades and decades, going back to when he was HUD secretary for Clinton. Nobody says anything. Now it's safe to come out. It's Hollywood all over again.
Sure. And I mean, we have members of the Illinois legislature who are given great benefit of the doubt, who are still serving, who had sort of several of them have accusations from previous public life against them with women. But, you know, we look the other way when it suits us. We go after people when it suits us.
Mm-hmm. Mary at Midway.
Oh, I had time to reflect on my comment while I was on hold. I think I'm making a boo-boo here. I might be meaning Mario, because you were just saying he could be played by Christopher Walken. Well, actually, Christopher Moltisanti, which is actually Michael Imperiola, the great Supreme
Yes,
actor,
right.
played the part of the Governor Cuomo in Escape from the Anamora. He made
oh,
him like,
yeah.
Oh, he made I him think that was... like such a nice, normal human being. And I'm thinking, timing-wise, it might have been Mario.
I can't remember. I think it was... I'm trying to remember. The Escape from Dannemora seems like it's within the last 15 years or so. So maybe it was Andrew. I can't remember.
I don't remember either. But wow, either way, they came out looking really good.
Yeah. Well, Walken
couldn't help his good acting.
Walken plays a great villain, though, and that's what you want for a movie about Nipple Rings Gambino. You want an actor plays a great villain, and that's Christopher Walken. Not to mention their cadence is similar. I assume Hansy Andy stole it from Walken. Tony on the South Side.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning.
Nice to have you on today.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, hey, listen, I want to clear up this whole it's an Italian thing, because it kind of is, but it kind of isn't. See, we as Italians, we hug and kiss people we know, our friends and our close friends and our family. I wouldn't walk up to a stranger on the street and just give a big hug and a kiss and stick my tongue in their ear. That's not how we roll, man. That's not going to happen.
That's because you're a prude. Dan, Tony, you're a prude.
Sure? Are you sure?
Well, okay, call me what you want. But here, listen, Dan, even though I know you from the radio and I know you from talking with you on the phone, if I met you on the street, now I might approach you, shake your hand, and maybe grab the side of your shoulders and give you a little rock, like, hey, how you doing,
yeah,
buddy?
Yeah.
That's going to be trust me, you're not going to get my tongue down your throat. So you're safe with me.
Just don't let that hand slip to the small of my back, Tony.
No, you don't do that either. That's not protocol. I'm telling you guys. So this guy's going on national TV, and he is now making us Italians look like we're some sort of creepy people. We're not, man. Of course we love. We're big lovers. You know, that's what we do. That's how we roll. But this guy, he's a freaking creep, man. And as far as I'm concerned, nothing better for him than just to live his life away somewhere in a dark hole. Nobody will see this asshole again. Oh,
there you
I apologize.
Go. I think the a-hole, I think, is the term. Thanks for the call, Tony.
How many times have we had to hit the chirp button today?
FCC minders aren't listening.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion. There's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J is Kristen McQueary, former editorial page editor of the Chicago Tribune. And I got some good news. If we're going to be sent to the gulag, those who believe in free minds and free thoughts and a free society, if we're going to the gulag, at least as long as the Babylon Bee is there with us, we'll laugh all the way to the gallows. Babylon Bee's latest offering, their version of John Lennon's Imagine.
Imagine there's no bread. It's easy if you try. No tacos or hot sauce. Nothing cold or fried. Imagine all the people living in the gulags, yeah. Imagine there's no money. It isn't hard to do.
Not hard to do.
Nothing to eat or drink now.
Not a crumb, not a drop now.
a wonderful tribute to communism, and you know, we need more of that. Another tribute to the state is this extension of the eviction moratorium in perpetuity. The Wall Street Journal opined that the eviction ban has to end sometime. Says you. How about private property ends before the eviction ban ends? How about that?
Yeah. How about we continue to force private landowners to offer free rent and figure out how to pay their mortgages and their property taxes? And
we'll send you some funny money. Throw you. Maybe we'll do like a landlord protection program.
Oh, I'm sure one exists.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Steve Moore, economist, Wall Street Journal columnist, Trumponomics author. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. So, yeah, what about that? I mean, why not just eliminate private property? It's such a hassle.
Yeah.
People live rent free. College is free. Healthcare is free. Rent is free. And we just keep printing money. It's simple.
Well, you know, there's so much pressure. I mean, you know, once AOC and some of these other squad members laid their body in front of the Capitol and refused to leave until the eviction moratorium were put back in effect, you know, I mean, who can stand up to that kind of scrutiny?
Sure.
And by the way,
Cory Bush and 300 people, that's just too much.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but it seems to me this is just a blatant violation of what the Supreme Court ordered. So I don't get how the president has the authority to do this, but we have a dictator now, not a president. Look, this is such a perfect example of a do-good liberal policy that imposes all of the costs on other people. So, you know, I have friends that are landlords. They're not rich. They own apartment buildings and they own, affordable housing units. And they make their living by collecting the rent on the payment. And if they don't collect the rent, folks, they can't pay the mortgage on the building. And if they can't pay the mortgage on the building, the bank doesn't get paid and so on. So now the government comes and says, you know, you don't have to pay your rent. And by the way, sorry, as an aside, I was just reading the criminal code. You can, if a landlord violates these eviction moratoriums, 1 year in prison. Even people in Chicago shoot people that get a year in prison.
That's
true. Sure, they just get electronic monitoring.
Yeah, I guess maybe the Democrats really are tough on crime. So, but my point is, look, this puts all the costs on the back of the landlords, the evil landlords who actually, and by the way, the left always complains, we don't have enough, you know, affordable housing in this country. Well, maybe it's because you don't force people when they build, you know, the affordable housing. If people aren't going to pay the rent, then nobody's going to build the housing. And I got to tell you guys, these two or three friends of mine that own these affordable housing units, they say as soon as these eviction moratoriums, the day that they go down, they say 80% of their residents stop paying the rent.
Right, even those who are working. I mean, the landlords know
in a lot of cases. Yes.
They know who's still working and who has income and who doesn't, but this just gives people an excuse. Right. And at least in Illinois, which had a separate moratorium, even landlords who had begun eviction proceedings, which, as you know, take forever, if they had started that long before the pandemic, those also were included under the moratorium. So they weren't even allowed to continue that process in court to get rid of deadbeats before this happened.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I live in the Washington, D.C. area. In Washington, D.C., if you've got they don't even need eviction moratorium. If you actually have a possession of an apartment, it's virtually impossible for a landlord to get the person out of if they could not be paying rent for 3 years and you can't get them out. I mean, it's like possession is 90% of the law. And so this is a real problem because you're not going to have, as I said, why would any rational person, you know, spend, you know, $3 or $4 million to build a big apartment building if nobody has to pay the rent?
Mm-hmm. And also, too, I mean, it's not just, as you say, it's a lot of mom and pops, too. It's like I buy a two flat and I take the top unit, I rent out the bottom unit. And that's the way that we either make, we make the mortgage payment manageable. We start to build our investment nest egg and so on and so forth. And those people are SOL, too.
Great point. The really interesting point about this, though, let's get to the practical now. Now, when these eviction moratoriums started, which was about a little over a year and a half ago, we had 25 million people who'd lost their jobs, right? I mean, COVID had just wrecked the economy. you know, there were many people who just didn't have jobs to go to. And so you could make a plausible case for a moratorium on evictions at that time. There's 9.2 million jobs open. Anybody in America can get a job in 48 hours if they need one. So what is it that people can't pay the rent?
Well, not right.
Sounding like a Scrooge or something?
Not to mention because of the relief checks, everybody's household income went up in the last year, too. I mean, here's the thing, too, just about the rule of law. And this is so instructive because this is when the Supreme Court plays politics rather than just coming down the side of the law and, you know, and risking being cast as heartless by your leftist cranks like the socialist Spice Girls. The justices who agreed to allow the moratorium to stand, the eviction moratorium,
it was a 4-4-1
yes.
decision. Kavanaugh had put out some kind of weird statement.
He said, Kavanaugh said, CDC had exceeded its authority and the moratorium could not be lawfully extended beyond the end of July, quote, without clear and specific congressional authorization via new legislation. Right. Well, we don't have that, so I guess you just get to ignore the Supreme Court, too, as you see fit.
Yeah, exactly. That's in fact, we wrote an item this morning in our hotline on exactly that point, that this is a blatant, where is Roberts? You know, Roberts is the one who stands up for the institution of the court. I mean, there should be outrage on the court. This is just a willful violation of a decree by the Supreme Court. And I don't know, Dan, where do you go from here? I mean, if the president is just going to defy the court, that's a constitutional crisis, isn't it?
Right. And well, I mean, to the extent that Republicans are going to be courageous enough to risk being called heartless or something like this by those same people and actually stand up and make this point, and it's not just going to be pundits on the radio.
Well, we will see. I don't have an answer to that one.
Yeah,
they have any spine. I mean, these are the same people. You know, you had 17 Republicans voting for this sham infrastructure bill.
Right.
Because we want to show the people that we can, quote, get something done. You know, we're not just obstructionists. We're willing to borrow and spend our country to oblivion, just like the Democrats are.
Well, we know this to be true. And I guess it requires leadership that just isn't present, particularly in the Senate. But I mean, the impetus is always for government to do something, even among most Republicans. We have to do something. We can't be seen as doing nothing. Doing nothing is the worst possible thing we can do when, in point of fact, oftentimes don't just do something. Stand there and take Calvin Coolidge as your model, not these activist Republicans.
Well, again, I mean, I just want to make this point because it's really important. I mean, the economy is back. You know, the economy is – the jobs are out there. There's virtually no one in America can say, well, the reason I can't pay my rent, I can't get a job. I mean, why don't we get the, you know, all these social workers, or, you know, hold these people's hands, say, you can't get a job? Okay, come on. Come with me. Come on. Here's a job. You see that construction site there? They've got an opening. You know, I mean,
you don't even have to do heavy lifting. You know? Talk to the restaurant industry, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's we have 9.25 million open jobs in the country, and we're letting people not pay their rent. And then we're, as you said, we're giving money. We're giving unemployment benefits. By the way, I think is Illinois still providing the supplemental
through September
unemployment benefits?
Oh,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah,
and we have one of the biggest cases of fraudulent claims. I know other states have as well, but huge problem with fraud and people receiving benefits or applying for them under other people's names. It's rampant. Yeah.
You know what else?
I need to mention one quick thing about this. So in the pay-fors, the offsets for this $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill, one of the pay-fors is they're creating a new unemployment insurance integrity program. And I'm thinking, gee, we've already spent $200 billion in the last, you know, 16 months on unemployment benefits. As you just said, in states like Illinois, Maryland, California has $32 billion in fraudulent payments. $32 billion. And just now, they're creating an integrity program to try to root out the fraud. I mean, talk about closing the barn doors after the horses have left. And then even worse, they're counting the money that they think they can save by creating this program to stop the fraudsters from stealing as an offset for the new trillion-dollar bill.
Oh, it's revenue. It's new revenue.
Right. Not only that, so these same Republicans who voted for this this trillion-dollar gambit, they're like please clap for Republicans like Mitt Romney. They're celebrating the fact that this is in part underwritten by, you know, repurposing $200 billion in COVID relief that wasn't spent. Okay, so you were off by $200 billion at least in terms of the initial money you authorized, that you voted to authorize for COVID relief. So we should trust you when it comes to – we should trust the same people who are off by that factor, that number to repurpose that money to do something else. It's not – that's a bug, not a feature. They don't understand.
And by the way, out of the there's something like 15 papers. By the way, do either of you own any cryptocurrencies?
No.
Do you own Bitcoin?
I saw that.
Where's your portfolio?
Well, I know they do, but it's not on the individual side. It's on the exchange side, and it's basically unenforceable. But it is an indication where they want to go. You're right about that.
Of course, they are terrified of cryptos because they're outside the control of government. But my point is that not one single offset is to cut some existing program. You know, we have a $4 trillion budget. We just talked about all the fraud and scamming that's going on in our budget. And they can't find a single program to cut as an offset for this new, you know, $1.2 trillion so-called infrastructure bill, which is really a green energy bill. And the people are going to make out like bandits, of course, are people like Dan who have $100,000 Teslas. And now, Dan, the government will pay for your charge of your battery. People on Teslas really need government.
Absolutely. I'm sick of paying for all the upkeep. Absolutely. Steve Moore, economist, Wall Street Journal columnist, Trumponomics author. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Have a great week.
Hey, join us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and in for Amy J. This morning is former Chicago Tribune editorial page editor Kristen McQueary. And just in case you thought that we were done with the politics of COVID in terms of electoral politics, the rewriting of the history of 2020 into 2021, that we could have reasonable conversations about this. Let's, you know, all be adults here. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, you may remember him from Impeachment 1.0, one of the star witnesses for the impeachment managers. He's got a book out. So, of course, he was on one of the fungible MSNBC shows to promote it. And here's what he had to say about President Trump, the failure to impeach and remove President Trump. The first time around, what it cost America.
I think that we should not be dismissive. If we want right to matter, we have to make it matter. I think the Congress, the Senate in particular, Senate Republicans abrogated their responsibilities under the Constitution and under the specific oath they swore during the trial. That there's a direct logic link to the 600,000 dead. If the president was held accountable, removed, we would have 600,000 more Americans walking the streets today. If they censured him, the president would be on his heels, and he would probably have been a little more cautious going into COVID. We wouldn't have an economic disaster. If we want things to matter, we have to make it matter.
Whew. Wow.
This is what passes as a military intelligence officer these days. Really. And of course, that statement, as ridiculous as almost any statement I've heard in the last 18 months, goes completely unchallenged. So if we had a different president, the virus wouldn't have made land here, Lieutenant Colonel, and 600,000 people wouldn't have died. We'd have 600,000 more. Nobody would have died from COVID because COVID would have never been here had we had a different president when you say we should have had one. There's a logical thread there.
But
on what planet?
Was he blaming Senate Republicans somehow for that?
For not removing him. We'd have 600,000 more Americans if he had been removed when Alexander Vindman said he should have been removed.
Okay. Well, if we're going to hold every elected official responsible for every COVID death, there are a lot of governors and mayors across the country who might want to dispute that.
Well, also, too, how does that inform your view of impeachment 1.0? Alexander Vindman, he doesn't have a political axe to grind. He's not a political actor. He's a military man. He's a military officer. He's a Foreign Service officer. He's just telling the truth. He's just there to protect this country. That was the storyline there. How does that hold up now that he's hawking his book and making statements like that? It's just remarkable. Just remarkable. And what they get away with because they have the conduits that half the country listen to. For more on this, pleased to be joined by Chadwick Moore, contributing editor for The Spectator. Chadwick, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning. Good
morning. If you want to pile on the Vindman thing, you're welcome to. Otherwise, we can move on. I just had to get that in because it's just so obscene that we're still playing this 600,000 dead. That is the responsibility of President Trump. 15,000 dead in nursing homes. Your governor there, Cuomo, and the Justice Department says there's nothing to see here.
Yeah. If you want to talk about President Trump, what about Andrew Cuomo, which I guess now the nursing home deaths seems were way worse than we thought since they're taking the sexual harassment thing in order to get him out of office, hoping that will detract from what Democrat, not just Andrew Cuomo, what other Democrat governors have been alleged to have been doing during COVID with shoving sick people into nursing homes for whatever reason. They thought that was a good idea or part of the plan. It is remarkable. You're right. And people just, it's what they want to hear. And they don't really care about the truth. They're thinking more deeply into it. They just want to hear orange band bad still. And the Democrats want to keep this going well into 2022. They want to keep lockdowns going and all this confusion around the information well into the midterms, hoping they can still keep blaming everything on Republicans and red states. You know, if you just did what we said, if Florida would just do what we say, these horrible Republicans, then everything will get back to normal. So make sure you don't vote for them next time.
So, Chadwick, you are a New Yorker, I believe, right? Tell us, ma'am. what is sort of the on the ground perspective with what happened yesterday with the governor? There was just a report out this morning. It may have been in the AG's report, but he even made uncomfortable, inappropriate comments to a doctor who was giving him a COVID test on live television. Told her that she made the gown look good. And the doctor was made very uncomfortable, saying he made remarks to her that he would not have made to a male doctor. And it just seems like it's never ending. So what is it like on the ground?
He's just so lonely.
He's hitting on everyone. I mean, a woman is putting a cotton swab up his nose and he takes it as an opportunity to.
I got someplace else you can put that
exactly.
swab.
Yeah, this is just crazy.
Well, it's also the audacity of Joe Biden to say he should step down when Joe Biden still has his own accuser out there that no one wants to give any attention to, in liberal New York City, of course, it's like, oh, well, what about Donald Trump and what about Justice Kavanaugh? All of these accusations against them, which have been thoroughly debunked, and a lot of kind of. Loopy people were giving a lot of media attention for accusations. It didn't seem that credible. But what's interesting about Cuomo is, you know, the report documents something like 179 accusers. So it was a sort of people who I'm sure many of them voluntarily came forward. But a lot of the accusations are a little could be taken out of context. Couldn't be, you know, it's maybe like, oh, maybe that sounded a little strange at the time. But if you get that many people coming forward, you can amass this huge document that looks really, really bad. And I'm not standing up for Andrew Cuomo, but it just seems like there is a political agenda on the left to get rid of him and for this reason, which I think is interesting. Nobody really questions that, and nobody really wonders why the party might want him out or what else is going on behind the scenes. But he's, Andrew Cuomo's, he's a guy named Cuomo from New York, so whether he's going to step down or not, I don't know, and he might not even have to. But, you know, we thought that this was going to happen months ago when these accusations first started coming out, and he just very smugly and boldly said, no, I'm not leaving, I'm staying. And then the media said, okay, and moved on.
Right. Well, now he's, you know, so now he's got this report, he's got a problem. Charlotte Bennett, her interview from March was pretty damning, and it actually looks more damning in retrospect, particularly after his just farcical, almost Monty Python quality response to the release of that report yesterday, where he talks about how he, you know, paws people from every walk of life in the world that he sees and so on and so forth.
He kisses everyone.
No.
He touches everyone.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter if you're black or white or gay or straight. This is just what we do. We're Italians. This is part of our culture.
It's culture. It's generational. It's all politics, like you just mentioned.
It's untrue.
It's untrue. I got to get back to fighting the COVID beast. I don't want to have to give up my international Emmy, so on and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah, the Emmy's another. That one is the gift that keeps on giving, his Emmy. So Hollywood is continuing to award sex pests with Emmys and all these others. He certainly could ride this out, and the media would let him do it. And, you know, he's got his brother on CNN who didn't even mention it last night and didn't seem to care that everyone was going to point it out today. He seems to be pretty secure in his job and, you know, it's a shame. It'd be really wonderful for him to leave, and if also if we could get his father's name off of the Tappan Zee Bridge, that would be a great thing too.
Speaking of New York City, let's talk about the Key to NYC pass that Mayor Warren Wilhelm has rolled out. You gotta have a vaccine, proof of vaccination to go to a health club, go to a restaurant, go to a theater. When does New York City go full Karachi? And I'm talking about Pakistan, where the government there blocked phone SIM cards for the unvaccinated. It's sort of like you can't use your cell phone if you don't get vaccinated, sort of that version of it. I mean, that's just, you know, a half a step from where de Blasio is at present.
Yeah, when people were saying they had fears of these things, you know, several months ago or a year ago, everyone said they're conspiracy theories, and now it looks like it's a march in that direction. Now, with de Blasio's order, I mean, it can't be legal or constitutional. I'm sure that lawsuits are already getting ready to be filed, but that doesn't seem to be the point. It seems like he's going to make this announcement. He's going to get people freaked out, think, well, I better get a bit vaccinated now. It's never going to, he's going to convince private businesses to go along with it, self-impose these restrictions on people. And then in the end, the state probably won't be able to actually enforce it, but it'll get people to voluntarily agree with it. And it's going to coincide with the end of tourism season. Numbers are going to drop anyway. They can congratulate themselves for that. But another interesting thing, in New York City, the people who aren't getting vaccinated, they aren't, you know, Trump-supporting rednecks, Republicans, that because there just are very few of them in New York. It's black people. It's Latino people. It's a majority of residents of the Bronx. It's over 50% of black New Yorkers. The unvaccinated are black New Yorkers. And so... Who's calling out the fact that Bill de Blasio is now saying that black people can't go to the gyms and can't go out to eat? I think that's the bigger story.
Right. I mean, these are his constituents, actually, who are the ones choosing to not be vaccinated. And largely because, like other folks, they are skeptical of government. And so they keep trying to twist this as if it's an equity issue and vaccine is just harder to get or it's not available to these populations. But I mean, coming from Chicago, that's just not true. I mean, here they will drive vaccine to your home because they are so desperate to get some of those communities on board with vaccination. But the politicians are trying to make it sound like it's an equity issue when in fact it's a trust issue.
Absolutely. You're completely correct about that. Anyone can get a vaccine. Why in New York it's as widely available and they make it as convenient as possible. And these are people who, God bless them, are distrustful of the government, and that's their right to be, and they don't want to be putting this medicine in their body. And here, their leaders, the people they elected, are forcing them to do something which they clearly don't want to do. I mean, anyone who wants to be vaccinated has had more than enough time to do it. Everyone has access to it. This is the liberal government saying, no, you don't have a choice in this. We're telling you what you have to do.
Before we let you go, I did want to get to this tribute you offered to a certain group of employees, workers in our economy. You wrote, like any rebellious granny slaughtering enemy of the state, I took many trips during lockdown, all of them essential. Stay at home, according to the science that only applied to the olds, the fats, the six Democrats. There remained nothing morally wrong or illegal with living life normally as best as you could. By the way, I like the term the fats as a category. Okay, so you're a rebellious granny slaughtering enemy of the state. So you were traveling during COVID, but you found or renewed a love affair with flight attendants as a category. Explain.
I felt that they needed some more love. I was just traveling during COVID, all of it essential travel, of course. The airports and traveling was so nice, and it gave me a lot of time to sort of reflect on how miraculous and almost divine this thing we do every day is, you know, hopping on airplanes. And I realized that the flight attendants don't get enough love, and they're treated like these, you know, minimum wage burger flippers, but really they're far more like something from Downton Abbey spirit. You know, their closest spiritual ancestors are from another century. They are stewards of great vessels. And they're also benevolent authoritarians, and which maybe we need a little more of in today's world.
Some less benevolent than others, in my experience. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Stewards of great vessels. Oh, that's interesting.
If they give free cocktails, that's the threshold for me. If there's no free cocktails, I'm going to have to disagree with your take.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
Chadwick Moore, contributing editor for The Spectator. Chadwick, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You join us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and in for Amy J this morning. Chicago Tribune editorial page editor, formerly, Kristen McQueary. And we're updating a story we told you about earlier this morning. Governor Pritzker will hold a press conference this afternoon at which he will reportedly issue an executive order requiring mask wearing in all K-12 schools. Wait for it. Public and private. Public and private. Here's a guy who feels totally insulated from political competition, and probably rightly so.
Probably is. I mean, this is just infuriating because it's a huge overstep on local governments being elected school boards and elected school boards being able to decide for themselves what is best for their school. Now he's going to reach his hand into the private school system where parents send their kids specifically to get away from all of these mandates that come from state government. Private schools that did an excellent job last year at keeping in-person learning while CPS and CTU and other teachers' unions fought each other like dogs and cats and didn't care a hoot about kids who sat home and didn't learn. Private schools actually got kids in the classroom. Teachers prepared for the fall by putting up plexiglass, setting up systems in place, having kids get their temperatures checked, putting them in cohorts. And guess what? It worked. And now they're going to be punished for doing a good job. And now the governor is going to issue by executive order as if we're still in a major emergency, which we are not. He's going to overstep the legislature, that entire branch, and try to institute forced mask wearing even in private schools. This should be fought.
Well, it's the Illinois that we chose, including some private schools that accepted the premise of the COVIDians to their detriment. And once you start accepting false premises, you get to false conclusions in bad places. And so, yeah, things were different last year than they are this year, but look at all we know about what we did last year. McKinsey studies, Brown University studies about the retardation in children's and young adults' intellectual and social advancement in schools, how far they've fallen behind, not to mention the deaths of despair and the incidence of reporting of mental health issues and so on.
The goalposts just keep moving. Because a lot of kids, especially for high school, a lot of these kids kids are getting vaccinated. Parents are bringing their teens to get vaccinated. You follow all the rules, do everything you're supposed to do, and they're still going to require your kid to wear a mask all day at school and possibly sports too. It's just ridiculous.
Well, the sports outside, I mean, that's just another category of insanity. That's like one degree out on the risk plane with respect to the insanity of this all. But again, with respect to mask wearing in school, you know, the regression in children's education, yeah, part of it is Zoom learning. The other part of it is particularly younger kids the ability to concentrate when you're masked up for 8 days, 8 hours a day in school.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the basis, the science and the data. Okay. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Jeremy Adams. He's a award-winning high school and college poli-sci teacher from Bakersfield, California, and the author of the just-released book, Hollowed Out, A Warning About America's Next Generation. Better listen up. Jeremy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan and Christian. I got to tell you, Illinois sounds a lot like California these days.
Yeah, well, it is. Yeah, in all the bad ways.
Yeah, yeah. You do not want to be emulating Illinois.
Except we don't have a chance to recall our governor right now. At least you guys have that going for you.
That is true. That is true. But sadly, it sounds to me like Chicago and Illinois schools are going to look a lot like California schools, which sadly is going to look a lot like last year. And I got to tell you, as somebody who's in the trenches of the American classroom, the last 16 months has been really, really difficult on young Americans. And frankly, I wrote Hollowed Out before all of this began because, you know, a lot of these really big books in America that are ambitious and claiming that there's a huge problem coming our way are written by famous people. I'm not famous. I'm just a classroom teacher. But I'll tell you, I have a front row seat to American decline in a way that nobody else does.
Well, describe what you're seeing.
Well, just to be perfectly blunt, you see a lot of young people who live their lives completely untethered to adult values, adult responsibilities, adult role models. You had young people on their devices 9 or 10 hours a day before the pandemic. And what does that mean? Well, that means that they're not dating. They're not reading books. They don't go to football games and movies the way that you and I used to. They don't know a lot about religion. They have awful mental health. You look at rates of suicide, self-harm. They are the least patriotic generation in American history. The desire for marriage and family is in free fall. Again, all of these things were before the pandemic, and I completely agree with what you're saying. These problems are amplified and accelerated in the wake of COVID-19, and we have got to get these kids back to a sense of normalcy to get them back on track so they don't continue to be hollowed out.
We even have a problem, and I'm sure this is not just in Chicago, but as I was reading about your book, Hollowed Out, our crime problem and juvenile carjackings and all of these things that have been amplified during the pandemic are fueled often by kids being on their cell phones, seeing something on
yes.
Snapchat, get an argument yes. that escalates and escalates. And it just creates a whole chain reaction of numbness for kids about life and weaponry and how they react to revenge type situations. It has contributed substantially to just an out-of-control crime problem here in Chicago.
Well, first of all, my best friend from college lives in Chicago, so I follow Chicago news quite a bit, hear about it quite a bit. But, Christian, you used the word numbness, and numbness is exactly right. You know, young people, when they are scrolling, when they are on their phones, you know, they're isolated. This is the loneliest generation in American history. Typically, it is the elderly who are the loneliest. It's actually young people today. And why is that? That's because they use their phones for coping. You know, one of the weird things to me, and you guys probably find it weird as well, is it used to be when I was growing up, or even when I was a younger teacher, you know, you would go to teenage gatherings and they would be loud. They would be rowdy. Kids would be talking, gossiping, flirting. You go into a classroom nowadays, especially in the wake of what we've done, radio silence. The kids, the moment they don't have anything to do, they don't talk, they don't run around, they literally turn on their phones and they just start scrolling or watching video after video after algorithmically produced video. My teenage daughters, we have these birthday parties for them, and I expect, you know, the kids to be, you know, kind of loud and boisterous. Again, you walk into a room with teenagers and it's silent. So, you know, the whole point of Hollowed Out is that the things that typically give our lives meaning, the things that we connect to, that give us happiness and joy, and what the ancient philosophers called the good life, you know, family, faith, country, community, friendship, all of this connective tissue is not there for our young people, which explains why rates of suicide and self-harm, and the word I hear all the time, Christine, all the time in the classroom from young people, is anxiety. They are constantly anxious, and that goes to the heart of the numbness you are describing. When you don't have adults in your life, when you don't have traditional values being modeled, you turn to something else, and that's where the numbness and the despair and the hollowing out comes from.
Right, and this is basically what needs to be put between the eyes of parents and adults, and because otherwise I don't know how you fill the void that you're describing. I mean, the kids aren't going to fill it for themselves. They don't know how to fill it. And so if it's not coming from the home, it's not coming from the classroom because, you know, I assume like in Chicago, you know, 80%, 90%, 95% of your fellow union members are, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Democrat socialists walking in lockstep with Gavin Newsom and the other and COVIDians and Randy Weingarten and that whole crew. And so where else does it come from? They have no exposure to it. And so where do they get the exposure unless you start, I don't know, really confronting parents and those who have material responsibility for part of the time over young people?
Dan, that's exactly right. You know, one of the questions I get a lot is, well, if they're hollowed out, then what's the solution? And the number one solution is the adults in our society have got to start adulting again. Again, people who are not in the classroom, I think, are surprised because I'm shocked the extent to which young people are just simply not around other adults. People will say sometimes, you know, when you write a big book like this, you wonder, well, what's going to be the knock? What are people probably on the left going to say about it? And what they're going to say is, well, this is just another traditional cranky curmudgeon who doesn't like young people. First of all, I'm too young to be a curmudgeon. I just want to say that. I'm not too, you know, I'm way too young to be a crank.
You sound 23 years old.
Well, God bless you, Kristen, for saying that. I appreciate that. But at the end of the day, there is something unique about this generation of hollowed out young people. And that is that young people today have achieved something that no other generation in the history of our species has ever achieved. And it is hollowing out. And you know what that is? Every young generation would love to have a room in their house where there are no adult eyes, no adult values, no adult consequences, where they can say and do whatever they want. There's an important part of my book in Hollowed Out where I talk about this a dean, I think, in Arkansas, and he said to the parents of his community, I confiscate these phones all the time. And do you know what your 13 to 18-year-olds are watching? Constant vulgarity, constant pornography, constant violence, constant values and images that are affecting them. Now, here's the thing. Our young people, Dan is right, they are going to get their values from somewhere. They're going to absorb a worldview which looks at traditional values and looks at their country in some way. And if the adults aren't going to do it, if the people who know what wisdom and being a patriotic American, if we're not going to step up and do it for them, they're going to get it in this toxic cauldron of crap called social media. I mean, people ask me all the time because I teach political science, why do young people dislike this country so much? Because they spend hours a day consuming content that teaches them how awful it is. There is no counter narrative. So when you don't know much, and when what you do know is bad, that's why 1 out of 5 millennials say they see the flag as a symbol of hate. That's why 18 to 29-year-olds have a more positive view of socialism than capitalism. It's because the adults have left the building.
Mm. So true. Jeremy Adams, award-winning high school and college political science teacher from Bakersfield, California. Pick up the book, Hollowed Out, A Warning About America's Next Generation. Jeremy, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck with the book.
Thank you. I hope it does well. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
You too. And he joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word APP to 64636 to download the app today.